This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Every year, tens of thousands of young men and women from West Africa make the perilous journey across the Sahara and the Mediterranean Sea to reach Europe.
Also, that's Lisa Schlein reporting from IOM headquarters in Geneva. Details coming up. Also, Boko Haram militants attacked several villages in northeastern Nigeria, killing more than 10 people. And last Tuesday in Cameroon, an American missionary was killed in a crossfire between Anglophone separatists and security forces. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the United Nations is appealing for peace in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo so aid agencies can bring the Ebola outbreak under control. Attacks by armed groups are hampering health workers, and the risks are keeping staff members of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control away from the affected area. The result is extra strain on the people fighting an already difficult-to-control disease. VOA's Paul Alexander looks at the challenges.
Dr. Mike Ryan is the World Health Organization's Assistant Director General, and he's in Beni, the epicenter for the fight against Ebola. He has watched as armed groups have staged deadly attacks on the area, then local residents respond angrily over the lack of security. While the anger isn't directed at the aid workers, they have to shut down operations until things calm down.
We've had a number of attacks over the previous month, which have greatly hindered operations. But also we've had much community reaction to those attacks, and the community outrage at the security situation has also compromised our team's ability to engage directly and work directly at community level.
Ryan says he can't predict what the reaction will be if there's another major attack. So security is a key issue, part of the daily discussions on planning the daily agenda for health workers. Those attacks include what areas are off limits and where burials may be taking place. This is important because the traditional methods of washing a body before burial puts the family members at risk of catching the virus. In some cases, there is resistance to performing safer rites. Right now, there are at least 279 confirmed or probable cases of Ebola in this outbreak and 179 deaths. While the security talks include contingency plans to pull out or relocate if things really heat up, Ryan sees no real option but to keep fighting Ebola.
We signed up for this. This is our job, and we will stay and serve regardless, because the threat of Ebola moving to other parts of Congo or crossing the border is just too great.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control have been helping the DRC improve its health system for decades and has been directly involved in the country's first 9 Ebola outbreaks. The security situation makes this containment effort different. Strict U.S. government rules govern where American government employees can operate overseas, and the conflict in the eastern DRC has put it off limits. Instead, they're providing long-distance support from the DRC capital, Kinshasa, and WHO headquarters in Geneva. Dr. Inger Damon of the CDC has helped in several Ebola outbreaks. She says the 17 to 20 CDC workers in Kinshasa are providing critical support, as are other government workers who are helping neighboring countries prepare for a possible Ebola crossover.
So right now, CDC's efforts are focused more in Kinshasa in terms of supporting the government's central efforts. We have folks in the World Health Organization in Geneva helping their coordination efforts, both in epidemiology and some of the border health issues, which is another area where we've helped out with in terms of mapping population movements to try to understand communities and countries which may be at risk.
But Damon also wishes they could be on the scene in Beni.
The expertise that has been gained over the years, is really best utilized in terms of working you know, at the site where the outbreak is, in terms of, you know, giving best opportunities for contributing to creative solutions and understanding gaps in the response.
Ryan understands the situation, but he wishes CDC could be in Binny too.
CDC is a superb agency, as is NIH, who are involved with us here as well. I've worked for 25 years in this game, and it sometimes it is harder to fight at the front line without a major ally there by your side. So if I had a choice, I would just love to have CDC colleagues here with us.
For now, all they can do is keep working to control the outbreak and try to be prepared for the twists and turns that will likely come before that can happen. This is Paul Alexander for VOA.
Uganda's Ministry of Health has been given a green light to vaccinate frontline health workers and high-risk populations against Ebola. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
For close to 1 month, Uganda's health ministry has been awaiting approval to start vaccinating health workers who are at risk of acquiring Ebola in case of any outbreak. This has finally been granted. Jane Ruth Acheng is Uganda's health minister.
The Institutional Review Boards and the Uganda National Council of Science and Technology today approved the protocol that gives us a go-ahead to vaccinate our health workers and also have ring vaccination in the event that we have an Ebola case in the country. We are hopeful that in the next perhaps 3 days we could start the vaccination.
The Institutional Review Board protects the rights and welfare of people who are recruited to participate in research activities. Uganda's government will work with the World Health Organization to carry out the vaccination program. Dr. Annette Chisache leads immunization programs for the WHO office in Uganda.
So basically we are going to vaccinate frontline health workers. And who are these frontline health workers? These are the health workers who are likely to get in touch with any suspected Ebola case. So that is the target. So basically we are targeting 3,000 frontline health workers. These are basically 3,000 doses.
The vaccination program is aimed at ensuring that if Ebola cases are found in Uganda, the disease can be quickly contained. Health workers treating Ebola patients will be among the first to be vaccinated against the highly contagious virus. People who have been in contact with Ebola patients also will be vaccinated to halt the spread. The vaccination program follows an outbreak of Ebola in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, where it has claimed more than 150 lives. No Ebola cases have been reported in Uganda yet. The vaccine that will be used in Uganda is the same vaccine that helped contain the Ebola outbreak in West Africa in 2016. It is now being used in the DRC. As of 2016, studies carried out by the Public Health Agency of Canada found that the vaccine was 95 to 100% effective against the virus. The WHO says the risk of Ebola spreading from the DRC to other countries is now very high, due to ongoing violence from militia groups. The outbreak is centered not far from the borders with Uganda, South Sudan, and Rwanda. Uganda has had 5 Ebola outbreaks since 2000, the latest being in 2017. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
A new radio drama series co-produced by the UN Migration Agency and several Nigerian agencies working on migration and trafficking issues, aims to deter people from risking their lives by making the dangerous journey to Europe. The series will be broadcast in Pidgin and Yoruba languages in 6 Nigerian states. Lisa Schlein reports from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
You're rocking Speed FM, first pigeon station for Edo State. We lead, others follow.
Speed FM in Edo State is one of several radio stations that will be airing Abroad Mata, a 13-episode drama series on irregular migration, followed by live phone-in sessions where people get a chance to talk about their experiences with an expert panel.
Effie, I'm a ribby.
Not true. I need to work home ourselves.
In this first episode, called Waka Well, Efe, a young woman from Benin, has just returned from a harrowing ordeal trying to cross the North African desert in hopes of getting to Europe. She tries to persuade her best friend, Patricia, who is trying to reach Europe from Libya, to return home. Every year, tens of thousands of young men and women from West Africa make the perilous journey across the Sahara and the Mediterranean Sea to reach Europe. Many are exploited and abused by smugglers and traffickers on the way. Others drown in the Mediterranean. Despite the risks, UN Migration Agency spokesman Joel Millman says irregular migration continues to flourish. He tells VOA social media propaganda and local gossip paint a rosy picture of life in Europe, enticing West African migrants to test their luck. He says the radio series aims to counter this false picture.
This is an effort to create a drama that's accessible, that's on the radio, that people can hear and make up their own mind about whether or not they've been told the truth about the experience of trying to make it to Europe irregularly this way.
The series is being broadcast by stations in Edo, Delta, Oyo, Ogun, Imo, and Lagos states.
Look around you, Patricia. It get many people there. We pray, see me, they go back home, me, they go meet their people, wait for us.
The Waka Well episode has a happy ending. Patricia's friends and his mama eventually convince him to return home, to everyone's delight. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Boko Haram militants attacked several villages near Maiduguri in northeastern Nigeria last night, killing more than 10 people. Hundreds of internally displaced people have taken shelter in camps in those communities. Boko Haram Islamist militants have rampaged through northeastern Nigeria for nearly a decade. Thousands have been killed by the militants and hundreds of thousands displaced. The fighting has crossed over into Cameroon and other neighboring countries. 44-year-old American missionary Charles Wesco was caught in crossfire between Anglophone separatists and security forces near northwest Cameroon Tuesday and killed. Wesco was in a vehicle with his wife and two others at the time. His brother Timothy spoke with VOA's Victor Beatty about his brother's death.
We heard he had been shot and that he was fighting for his life. I immediately went over to my parents, who live just about 5 miles from our home, and it was there that we received word from his father-in-law that he did not survive. The details as we know them are that they were living in Bambili, and several of them, including his wife, their son, Charles Jr., and another missionary, went to look for a vehicle for them to purchase in the nearby town of Bambili. As they had only been there for a couple of weeks, they were still getting, or they hadn't even been there for 2 weeks. They were still getting some of those details worked out. On their way, just a short way from Bambili to Bambui, shots came from some tall grass, and my brother took the brunt of the shots. And they took him to a clinic, and then he was transported to a regional hospital where the Doctors Without Borders tried to assist him, but they weren't able to save his life.
He was just recently in Cameroon. I guess he and his family surveyed the area a couple of years ago. What was the purpose of his mission there?
That he has served in various ministry roles here in the States and has long dreamed of serving the Lord on the mission field, that possibility. His objective was to share the love and hope that is in Jesus Christ.
Was he supported by just a single church, a series of churches, or a mission board?
He's supported by churches really all over the country. He and his family have spent at least the last couple of years traveling in an RV to local churches around the country, which each church independently chose to support him and his family, and that's how they were supported.
Was he aware of the conflict between the Anglophone separatists in Cameroon and the French-majority country?
They had heard that there were some disturbances, but there was indication that they would be relatively safe, and they did delay their trip for a period of time due to health reasons and due to some concern about the conflict, but the word was that it was relatively safe for Americans.
That was Timothy Wesco speaking with our colleague Victor Beatty about the death of his brother Charles Wesco, a missionary killed in Cameroon Tuesday. Timothy Wesco said his sister-in-law and her 8 children were making arrangements to return to the U.S. The U.S. State Department called on both sides in Cameroon to view Wesco's death as an opportunity to put an immediate stop to violence that has left hundreds dead over the past year and allow humanitarian aid workers access to the contested northwest and southwest regions. English-speaking separatists are trying to create their own country called Ambazonia, saying Cameroon's French-speaking majority discriminates against them. Protecting human rights lie at the heart of the United Nations mission. That's why a crucial part of its work is monitoring compliance among its 193 members and helping to build capacity for compliance when nations fall short. That job often falls to the special rapporteur and independent experts assigned to specific countries. In Somalia, which has suffered decades of conflict, this is an especially difficult task. VOA's Adam Phillips reports.
When Somalia's transitional government was put in place in 2012, it was after nearly 20 years of civil war. The state itself had effectively collapsed in the early 1990s, giving rise to anarchy and the militant extremists Al-Shabaab. The current government came into office last year, and Bahame Tong Ndungai, the UN independent expert for Somalia, says it has a lot of work to do.
What Somalia has been trying to do is to create all the pillars of government, that means the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary, in a manner where the police would be conducting investigations where there are crimes which are reported, and there will be prosecutions going before the courts. That is the challenge now Somalia is trying to solve.
Somalia still operates under a provisional constitution. When the transitional government ended, the new administration affirmed its commitment to human rights before the UN. However, in its early days, it often tried Al-Shabaab militia members and other fighters in military courts and executed them in a public square upon conviction.
There was a public execution every Friday, but we said it's not humane to execute people in public when children are watching and everybody is watching. So this practice is not done anymore, and we see it as an improvement, as a form of respect for humanity.
In Somalia's conflict areas, especially in the south, Al-Shabaab abducts children and forces them to commit crimes against civilians and government institutions. Sometimes national troops working with African Union forces rescue child recruits.
They're working with the civil society organizations in this regard. The UNICEF is doing a lot of work to train the soldiers of the National Army on how to treat captured children.
Ndunga says that often both rebels and government troops use sexual violence against women, and there is no effective national system to protect victims.
Now, this is my role to highlight the challenges that faces Somalia, and it's a responsibility of the international community to assist, whether it be in the judiciary, the police, the correctional services.
Freedom for the press remains a critical issue. While journalists are technically allowed to report as they wish, in practice, they often face arrest when they investigate the government. Ndunga says Somalia's security apparatus has mostly stopped destroying or confiscating journalists' property.
But the problem is continued intimidation, arrest, and in some cases even assassination, and we say that the government should investigate all those cases and punish them.
And Ndunga says Somalia's government must be held accountable. When wrongdoing is found in a ministry, other arms of the government need to investigate and make sure that problems are remedied. Ndunga says that respect for human rights has increased somewhat in Somalia in recent years, but predicts those gains will remain precarious until a permanent constitution is agreed on and government accountability is ensured. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
South Africa's president is pushing hard for the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. When he hosted an investment conference earlier this month, Cyril Ramaphosa dangled this carrot at business leaders, saying it would give them access to a market of more than 57 million people. Reporter Vicky Stark asked the executive director of the South African nonprofit Trade Law Center, Trudy Harzenberg, for an update on the trade pact. The center's mission is to develop trade governance in Africa.
So the aim is to take a look at a continent-wide regional trade agreement so that 55 member states of the African Union can actually integrate their economies. So the potential for this to open up investment, production, trade opportunities is enormous.
What is being done to allay the fears of the smaller countries?
This is of course, a real challenge, because small, least developed countries, in particular the landlocked ones, are concerned that most of the benefits of the continental free trade area will accrue to the larger economies. And it's not an unfounded fear. So for the smaller countries, they really have to take a look at how they can position themselves in terms of opportunities in neighboring countries, but also in countries that they're not currently trading with. But it is also important to keep in mind that within this agreement, there will be specific provisions. For example, there are provisions on safeguards. Safeguards are a measure which can be applied by, say, a least developed country. If suddenly, after the continental free trade area is implemented, they see a surge in imports which may harm the domestic industry, then they can limit imports by introducing, for example, import duties. So there are safety valves, if you like, within the agreement itself.
The African Continental Free Trade Agreement, when is it likely to be finalized?
Phase one, which is trade in services and trade in goods, is expected to enter into force by the end of January next year.
How many African countries are endorsing this agreement?
So far, 7 countries, and then South Africa has been added to the list. In order for the agreement to enter into force, for those members that have signed and ratified it, we need 22 countries. But the African Union Commission is optimistic that by the end of the year, so by end of December, they will have reached that threshold.
That was the executive director of the Trade Law Center, Trudy Harzenberg, in the Western Cape province of South Africa. She was speaking to Vicky Stark in Johannesburg. 8 countries have so far ratified the African Continental Free Trade Agreement: Kenya, Rwanda, Ghana, Niger, Chad, Guinea, and South Africa. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhiv in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Shogun Chang, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
She said she too young, don't want no man. starting Monday, November 5th, tune into Border Crossings to win a free copy of Now 68, featuring top songs from a variety of artists. This CD features Calvin Harris's One Kiss, along with Ariana Grande's God Is a Woman, and many other hit songs. Tune in to Border Crossings to win.